Places, episode 18. Today, I'm going to talk about some ghost stories. Seeing as how all the stores in the area think that it's almost Halloween, and my calendar says it's still July. It's been a while since there were any ghost stories on the show, so I figured now would be a good time to bring out some ghost stories again. I was born into a little haunted duplex apartment building. My mom and dad lived there when they first got married. They spent their honeymoon cleaning it up. So, pretty romantic. They cleaned up their little apartment. When they went to bed that night, they made sure all the lights were turned off in the little apartment. And they would sleep with the closet light turned on in the bedroom, have the door cracked. And they had the light turned on at night. It was one of those old pull chain lights in the closet, and they turned the closet light on before they went to bed at night and left the door cracked so they'd have a little bit of light if they needed to go to the bathroom or anything. And when they woke up the next morning, the light was off. So they thought maybe the bulb might have blown or something, so pulled the chain to test it out, and the light came on. We kind of joked each other, our apartment must be haunted. That happened every night for the next few weeks. Every night they'd go to bed and they'd wake up the next morning and the light would be off again. So one day they asked their landlord if he'd been turning the light off somehow as a prank, but he assured them that it would be impossible to turn it off any other way than to pull the string. My dad asked him if any of the other tenants that had lived there, talking about the place being haunted. And the landlord had a good little chuckle and he said, no, it's not haunted. One day they took the vacuum out of the closet and they cleaned the carpets through the whole apartment. They put the vacuum back in the closet and woke up the next morning and the light was off like always. And there is this old black and white picture of three women standing in a cornfield laying on top of the vacuum. And they had been using a vacuum all day that day before. So there's no way that picture would have just been laying there on top of the vacuum. And neither of them had ever seen the picture before. And they asked the landlord if he knew any of the women that were in the picture. And he recognized one of the women as being the former owner of the apartment. They wondered if she would be the person that was haunting their apartment. So stuff like that kept happening the whole time they lived there. Like a year and a half later, then I was born. And some of my earliest memories, I remember seeing like things falling over and stuff. I'd be in my little playpen and stuff, and I would see like lamps tipping over and going across the room or whatever, and just crazy stuff like that. The lights would come on and off 2-3 times a week, and TV would go off and on. Pictures would be rearranged, chairs would be moved away from the kitchen table. My mom and dad felt kind of uneasy about it, but they didn't really ever feel threatened by the ghost. We lived there in that little haunted apartment until around March of 1977. My dad bought a little trailer and we lived in it then until I was 18 years old. And we didn't really have any kind of trouble in the trailer except for just a few little odd things here and there. They were in bed one night. My mom got up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And when her feet touched the floor getting out of the bed, something grabbed her ankle. So that'd be little bit unnerving. You know, we lived in that trailer until I was about 18 years old, 19 maybe. Then my dad bought a haunted house. So we got to be in a haunted house again. My dad still lives in that haunted house till this day. We always hear people knocking on the windows and the phone and junk in the house. We hear like music playing sometimes. That's kind of weird too. There's like haunted musicians. You hear like tambourines or something and like guitars. You can hear just like weird stuff. If you've got a ghost story and you'd like to be a guest on the show, send an email to indarkplacespod@hotmail.com. So now it's time for the news. Never before seen colossal comet on a trek toward the sun. A week after astronomers noticed a new object in the sky, they've identified it as a comet. A new visitor is swinging by the solar system. A never-before-observed comet the hills from the Oort cloud. This alien object was just designated as a comet Wednesday, June 23rd, only a week after astronomers first observed it as a tiny moving dot, an archival image from the Dark Energy Camera at the Inter-American Observatory in Chile. The comet is now known as Comet C2014-UN217, or Bernardinelli-Bernstein, after its discoverers. University of Pennsylvania graduate student Pedro Bernardinelli and astronomer Gary Bernstein. The comet, which may be an impressive 62 miles wide, is 20 times the distance from Earth to the Sun away, is heading toward our blue dot. It will reach its closest point to the Sun in its orbit on January 23, 2031, when it will be just beyond the orbit of Saturn, or about 10.95 times the distance between Earth and the Sun. I'll tell you that now, but next thing you know, you're going to be in the middle of a Deep Impact movie sequel part two or something. This thing's going to slam into us. The comet that killed the dinosaurs was said to be 7 miles wide. This thing is 62 miles wide. So it's just going to be like a game of pool. It's going to slam into Earth and we're just going to bounce out into the solar system. It's going to be a mess. So you'll recall when America released all their big UFO documents and still kind of kept them secret for only Congress and special members of the elite to see them. But they supposedly, yeah, they released those documents. So now Japan is jumping on the bandwagon. Time for Japan to get real on UFO intelligence sharing. Gone are the days when UFO stories were dismissed as crackpot pseudoscience. Today, they are an emerging field of public policy debate. Recent U.S. report on unidentified flying objects has brought these mysterious lights into the realm of serious discussion on national security. The world's powers need to take note. Japan and European allies of the U.S. should work on sharing information on these UFOs to learn more about them and assess potential security risks. A report released on June 25th by the Office of Director of National Intelligence examines 144 cases of what they're calling UAPs. I don't like the term UAP. That needs to just go away. There were 144 incidents of these UAPs gathered since 2004, mainly by U.S. military, most of them from the past 2 years. For many readers, the 9-page-long document raised more questions than answers. Of the 144 reported UAP sightings, the Pentagon Task Force that examined the episodes could offer a reasonable explanation for only one case identified as a large deflating balloon. The rest remain unexplained. Closer cooperation between the U.S. and its allies on sharing and studying UAP sightings is essential. Most of the 144 UAP episodes covered by the report occurred in or around the U.S. airspace. If a foreign state or group is developing advanced weapons, chances are it will conduct more tests in other parts of the world rather than risk exposing its work to Americans. If Russia or China were involved, Japan might be in a better geographical position than the U.S. to gather information about the technology. Japan is beginning to take a minimum response to the challenge. By September, a month after the U.S. set up the UAP Task Force, then Defense Secretary Taro Kono issued an unusual order to the Self-Defense Forces to take visual records and analyze such sightings. During his meeting last summer with then U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper, Kono raised the topic and agreed with the Pentagon chief to share information. Traveling to space has become a thing among the world's multi-billionaires. This month, Virgin Group founder Richard Branson rode into space aboard a rocket that he helped fund by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. But humans know only a sliver of the vast universe. While lawmakers and news media should still never feed wild alien conspiracy theories, the U.S. report has spelled the end of the taboo on discussing UFOs in the public policy sphere. That's about all the news. I got some creepy ghost story emails. This email comes from one of our loyal listeners from just a few nights ago. He captured a ghost on his security camera out on his front porch. There's an old man that lives across the road from our witness, and the old man got sick or whatever, and there was an ambulance there picking him up and going to take him to the hospital. And you can see in the video the lights from the ambulance kind of flashing across the yard of the witness's house. Then just out of nowhere, you can see this figure walking from the porch going out like into the driveway area. It's pretty creepy. It picks up into something with the ambulance lights, made it detect this ghost or whatever, maybe some kind of ultraviolet colors or something from the light. I don't know. The flashing or something. You can clearly see a figure of what looks like a man walking off the porch going toward the driveway. Our witness has just lived in this house for a few years, 5 or 6 years or something, and he was told that the old man that used to live there before him died in the house there. And one of the neighbors that lived across the road from him said that he was out sitting on his porch one day, and he looked over toward his house before he bought it, and the old man that died there was sitting on the porch like he always did, but he had died like a month before. So he was an old man that died, and the old man across the road, they were probably friends living in the same neighborhood. So it could have been the old man that died walking out to check on his friend. Could have been his ghost. So it's pretty creepy. And there's another email from the same listener. He says he was hauling mine supplies in Boone County, West Virginia. And he was in Wharton, and there was a mine that you had to drive onto a dirt road for several miles to get to. It was a good road. It was wide and stuff. I got to this bridge, and I saw someone standing at the end of the bridge next to the side. This was in the middle of nowhere, and about 8 p.m. at night. I got up to where I could see this person, and it was a younger guy, probably about 18, wearing an outfit out of the 1800s. He had a big brown hat on, and he had old brown looking pants and an old looking button up shirt with suspenders. He had a dead stare on his face. It was real pale looking. His eyes looked up toward my cab, but his head or body didn't move. When I got to the mine, I was talking to a couple of guys, and they were surprised that I found the location. I told them that I thought about stopping and asking that boy at the bridge if I was going the right way, and their faces dropped. They asked me what he looked like, and I told them, and they got scared and told me that I saw the ghost that everyone talks about seeing. I told them that's why I didn't stop, because he was freaking me out with his clothes and the look on his face. I'd like to give a huge thank you to Milkman for sending those stories along. There's an old train tunnel that goes from West Williamson into Williamson, West Virginia. And up until the 1960s, that was the fastest way to get into Williamson. If you lived on the other side of Williamson, you could just walk through that train tunnel and go into Williamson. And they've got little manhole areas dug out so many feet within the tunnel so that if a train comes, you can jump into one of those little manholes and wait for the train to pass. It's not really intended for pedestrians, but back in the 50s and 60s, that was the way to go. But my grandpa talks about how he would always walk through that tunnel back in the 50s and 60s. And sometimes a train would come and he would have to jump in that manhole and wait for the train to go by. He was going in the tunnel one day on his way into Williamson, walking on foot, and a train was coming. So he heard the train. He jumped into a manhole and he was getting ready for the train to come. And he looked, and there was another man in the tunnel with him. And my grandpa hollered at him. He said, "You better get out of the way. There's a train coming." And the train came and just kind of went right through the guy. He was a ghost. Yeah, my grandpa's got a million of those cool stories like that. Just when you thought Halloween was over.
Fully vaccinated people don't need to wear masks or socially distance.
Dr. Fauci says,
as a fully vaccinated person, should we have any worries about walking by someone on the street who may be unvaccinated?
Not at all. I would have no concern walking down the street past a person who's not been vaccinated and even a person who's been infected, because the protection is really quite substantial.
The World Health Organization is urging fully vaccinated people to continue wearing masks as the Delta variant spreads worldwide.
The Delta variant.
The Delta variant.
Delta variant.
Delta variants.
Delta variant.
Delta variant.
Even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask.
Fear, 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 fear.
Delta variant coming this fall to a town near you.
So we, you know, we'll have to prepare for the next one. That, you know, I'd say is, will get attention this time. Mm-hmm.
Now I've got an interesting little story that I had never heard about until back around Halloween of last year. There are people who believe that Octavia Hatcher was not buried alive, although you may have trouble finding them in the city that surrounds her grave. I think there's enough anecdotal evidence to say that this really did happen, said Everett Johnson, curator of Pikeville's Big Sandy Heritage Center. Most local historians do agree that she did fall ill and was buried alive, as generally accepted, said Jessica Forsyth, a member of the board of directors. Of course, they didn't know she was alive when they buried her. Octavia Hatcher was 20 years old when she gave birth to her first child, Jacob, in early 1891. Jacob almost immediately died. Octavia sank into a long depression and then a coma. She died on May 2nd, 1891. This was during a spell of hot weather, so she was buried quickly. And then it was noticed that other people in Pikeville were also falling into swoons, but not dying. People think that the swooning could have been caused by mosquito bites. Mosquito could have been biting people in Pikeville and making them go into a coma. Or maybe it was just escaping gas from a coal mine. But they were all going into a coma and they'd wake up after a few days. So James Hatcher started kind of freaking out. Thought, could Octavia have been buried alive? They went to dig her up and they found this horrible sight, said Everett. Her fingernails were all bloody and the lining of the coffin was shredded and her face was all contorted. She had indeed been buried alive. An absence of news accounts of this newsworthy event is often cited by its critics as proof that it didn't happen. But Octavia Hatcher wasn't just anybody. She was the daughter of one of Pike County's elite families. Her husband, James Hatcher, owned thousands of acres of Pike County land and made a fortune in timber and coal. Octavia Hatcher's gruesome fate made for juicy gossip, but actually reporting it could have been seen as a bad business decision for a local newspaper or undertaker or doctor in what was essentially a company town. Relatives of the Hatchers still disavow the story. They say it was just a bunch of foolishness and nothing like that happened, said Everett. Year after Octavia's death, James Hatcher had a life-size marble statue of his wife set atop her hilltop grave. An expensive gesture for the time, Later, he built the downtown Pike Hotel, choosing a spot where Octavia's marble gaze would always watch over it and him. Still later, he built the James Hatcher Hotel, with a small museum of local artifacts in his lobby. These included the photograph used to model Octavia's statue, as well as James's own custom-built coffin, designed to prevent him from being buried alive. He never remarried, and he outlived Octavia by nearly 50 years, and was buried at her feet. There is a story that when he died, a string was tied around his finger to run up above the ground, said Everett. The bell was at the end of it, so that if he had been buried alive, someone would hear the bell ring. The stories didn't end with James Hatcher's death. Octavia's grave was said to be haunted, and in Appalachia, ghosts were taken seriously as evidence of misdeeds. According to legend, every year on the anniversary of her death, the statue will turn as if she's turning her back on the city that turned its back on her. Fed up, the Hatchers erected a tall fence around the grave. The statue stopped spinning. Polly Hopkins, director of the Big Sandy Heritage Museum, told us that her father knew someone in his college class who had broken off Octavia's right hand during one of these nocturnal spinning shenanigans. Ghosts don't seem that special nowadays. People see them everywhere. But you'd be hard-pressed to find a grave of someone buried alive, and Octavia Hatcher's is particularly dramatic, with its mournful, towering statue, mossy with age. Very little of this is documented, admitted Everett, but he remains convinced that Octavia's premature burial is not just a tall tale or a spook story. "We all know we weren't there," said Jessica, "but most people do accept that she was buried alive." So that article was from roadsideamerica.com. And you can go there and get directions to go see the grave and the statue. And you can set up camp and see for yourself. Does the statue really spin like that? Or is that just kind of made up folklore legend over the years? The real story is a little less gory. Till this day, no one has been able to locate the obituary for Octavia or her son. However, in letters and notes written by James, he never mentions her tragic death. James died in 1939. Any record of anything that was said about James or he says about himself includes Octavia. In his obituary, it says that Octavia was the love of his life, but it does not say that he was married to her. Only months before he died, in a letter to the Pikeville College president, he mentions Octavia. He always mentions her warmingly and lovingly without any thought that something horrible might have happened in her death. Some people believe that the whole story about Octavia could have came from James himself and his quirky characteristics. So is this a legend or did it really happen? We may never know until we actually find that obituary. That period of the newspaper is not available for people to research. It's just mysteriously gone. It's like a handful of those months of her obituary, where there should have been, is gone. There isn't any proof that she was actually buried alive, or if the obituary said that she just passed away. So as generations continue to pass, the story keeps growing and people will talk about different things. They even go as far as saying that they can hear a baby crying in that cemetery, and that the ghost of Octavia is looking for her little baby. James, a wealthy businessman, started with storage warehouses for lumber. He ran steamboats and owned hotels and more. He did a little bit of everything. He was the type of fellow that when he went into something, he went into something big. And when it failed, he failed spectacularly. But when he succeeded, he made all kinds of money. Through the years, stories can be misinterpreted or parts have been added for effect. Many who know the story believe Octavia's statue was at one time holding their son Jacob before her arm was broken by vandals. However, that is not the truth. She actually never held the baby. She was holding an umbrella. In the portrait, she was holding an umbrella. So her arm with the top of the umbrella is gone. The baby has always been at her feet. So that's about all the stories I got for this week. And if you've got a story to tell, you'd like to be a guest on the show, send an email to indarkplacespod@hotmail.com. It's been a lot of talk about Mothman on this show. We've kind of teased around at some Mothman stories here and there. And as you know, the Mothman Festival is on September 18th in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. It will be the 20th annual Mothman Festival. So exactly a month before that, on August 18th, I'll be kicking off a month of Mothman here on In Dark Places. I'm going to do a whole month of Mothman-themed stories, talking to Mothman witnesses, getting some first-hand accounts. It's going to be a big celebration of our friend the Mothman. So mark that date on your calendar and stay tuned August 18th for a month of Mothman. It's going to be every week up until the Mothman Festival on September 18th. Be sure to tune in next week when Kyle Lovren will be returning to the show to tell some more cool UFO stories. Thanks for listening. God bless you guys. See ya.